When I was a windy boy in the bit and the black spit of the chapel fold, sighed the old ramrod dying of women. I tiptoed shy in the gooseberry wood, the rude owl cried like a telltale tit. I skipped in a blush as the big girls rolled, ninepin down on the donkey.
You're listening to the voice of Dylan Thomas reading his poem, Lament. A page from this Sunday's edition of Anthology. This is Fleetwood. Each Sunday evening at this time, WRCA, in cooperation with the Poetry Center of the YM and YWHA, Avenue in Manhattan, brings you Anthology, a selection of readings from poets past and present, and the music to accompany their poetry. This afternoon, poetry from Wales. Our guests, Peter John Stevens and Richard Davis, and by transcription, Dylan Thomas.
Davith ap Gwilym. Se digrif y bîm heddiw, dan fentys y gwyrgyll gwyw, yn gwrando ddechrau dydd y ceiliog bronfraith celfydd yn canu englyn alathr, a rwyddion a llithion lladr. Pellennig, pwy llai anwyd, pe llai siwrna'r llatau llwyd. Yma daeth o swydd goeth gair, a mae erchu o mae'r chwaer. Gairiog, heb un gair gwarant sef y cyrch i nentyrch nant. Morfydd ei hanfonasau, midr ganiadaeth, mab maeth mai.
A medieval Welsh poem read for you by Richard Davis and a traditional Welsh melody serve as a preface for our program of Poetry from Wales on Anthology. Wales is one of the few countries in the world where poetry not only constitutes the basis for one of the most important events of the year, the National Eisteddfod, but is a part of the everyday life of its citizens. The first of our guests is a playwright and poet who fondly recalls his Welsh childhood near St. Fagan's Castle in Wales, the country of his people. The author of Welsh folk plays such as Hugh of the Glen, The Changeling, and A Power of Dreams, he is now working for the British Information Services in New York, and in his spare time is engaged in a study of the Welsh language. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Peter John Stevens.
Well, thank you. I'm very glad to be here and very proud to be on a Welsh program, I might add.
We're very glad to have you here, Peter, and I'm probably as good a person to talk to you as anybody because I know absolutely nothing about Welsh literature and poetry. So, assuming that perhaps a good many of our listeners are in the same state, would you mind starting from scratch, so to speak, with us and telling us, for instance, whether Welsh literature is different from the body of English literature in general?
Well, of course, that's a very large question, but I can begin by saying that one has to remember that the Welsh literature is probably one of the oldest in Europe, and, of course, it's been traced back to as far back as the Roman occupation of Britain, and I think possibly I can introduce that subject by reading a poem, or at least it's part of a dramatic poem that was written by Mr. Saunders Lewis, who is one of our most eminent living Welshmen. He wrote a play which was done on BBC, I believe, called Buched Garman. And this part of the script is entitled The Eagles Depart. In translation, it reads like this. Yet in that hour it was that learning and piety blossomed like late spring in our land. To our midst in Dyfed and Gwent and Glamorgan came a constant stream of sages, teachers of letters and law from the ravaged lands to the east and the burned-out cities. Our lime-washed churches and schools bloom like the cherry tree blossom, and Ambrosius, lord of Caerleon and the south, eagerly welcomes the heirs of Quintilian and Virgil, the fathers of language, and the dejected, pious disciples of Jerome of Bethlehem.
In translation, at least, it comes out as very rich, very beautiful language.
Well, it gives an idea of how the Welsh people, I think, felt when the Romans left Britain. The Romans, of course, are highly cultured people, and they appreciated that tremendously. When the Romans left, they were left to the mercies of the Saxons who came over later, and they were regarded as nothing but barbarians. They didn't even have horses or didn't have armor in battle, which is a sure sign of barbarity.
What is Wales like today?
Well, let me say at the beginning that I think it's one of the most beautiful countries in the world.
I've never been there, I'm sorry to say.
You certainly missed something. But let me see now. I suppose one could say it's about the size of, shall I say, a little smaller than Texas. That at least would make it a large country.
It's a big country. What about the language, Peter? Why is the language important, if it is?
Well, I think that the Welsh language is such a very old language. It has maintained its traditions through centuries of time, and it has had a great control on the poetic expression, and the Welsh people have been very conservative in a way in their styles, and they've kept to the old methods, and when they have changed them at all, they have created new forms out of something like inspiration, and it has influenced their whole thought. You'll find that some of the most important writers of what we call England, but actually is Britain, come from the Welsh. The first important chronicler in Britain was a Welshman.
Who was that?
Well, he was a man by the name of Gildas, who wrote in Latin. Then there was one a little after him, about 200 years after him, who was a very important scholar by the name of Asser, who was thought so highly of that King Alfred asked him to come to his court. In order to experience something of the sound of words coming out in English that are inspired by Welsh, maybe I could read a poem that has been translated by Glyn Jones, who is one of the bilingual writers in Wales today. It's a piece of work that was written by Dafydd ap Gwilym, who is a contemporary of Chaucer's. And he wrote a poem. He's a very great writer, by the way, one of the classics in Wales. And he wrote a poem on the love messenger tradition addressed to a seagull. In those days, they would often write, when they wanted to address their beloved, they would send a message to her by some animal or some bird that they would pick out. And they would speak to this bird, compliment the bird or the animal, and then ask them to carry the message. And this is what this is. It's called the seagull. Gracing the tide warmth, this seagull, snow-semblanced moon-matcher, the sun-shard and sea-gauntlet floating, the immaculate loveliness, the feathered one, fish-fed, and the swift-proud is buoyant, breasting the combers. Sea-lily, fly to this anchor to me, perch your webs on my hand. You, none among ripples, habited brilliant as paperwork, come. Girl glorified you shall be, pandered to, gaining that castle mass, her fortalice. Scout them out, seagull, those glowing battlements. Reconnoitre her, the eager complexioned. Repeat my pleas, my citations. Go, girlward gull, where I ache to be chosen. She, soulless, pluck up courage, accost her, stress your finesse to the fastidious one, use honeyed diplomacy, hinting I cannot remain extant without her. I worship her, every particle worships. Look, friends, not old Merlin, hot-hearted, nor Taliesin, the bright-browed, beheld the superior of this one in loveliness. Cypress-shaped, but derisive beneath her tangled crop of copper, gull, oh, when you eye all Christendom's loveliest cheek, this girl will bring annihilation upon me, should your answer sound, gull, no relenting note. In Wales, the poet held a very important place. He sat very near the king in the court. And he was given, at the time when he was created the court poet, he was given a harp and a gold ring. And he was told that it was all on condition that he should not be at any time without the harp.
Why was that?
Well, because poets, in those days, they used the harp as a background for their reciting. And it's actually been come down through the ages because the harp in Wales is very prominent today. And though they use it slightly differently, it has always been there. And then the chair tradition, which I have mentioned of the this business of the court poet being able to sit near the king, this honor that was given to poets has been carried through in tradition through Wales and now is used in the national establishments. Sir Idris Bell, one of the best-known translators, has translated the poetry of a contemporary Welsh poet, D. Gwenllth Jones. He is a twice-chaired bard and a poet very concerned with the welfare of his people. That's an expression of the strong Welsh conscience exhibited by Welsh poets for more than 1,000 years, we say. He writes here, for instance, I'll quote a little piece of his poetry. He writes of the wholesale reforestation program. Our family had a nest full of poets, and today there is nothing there but trees. Their insolent roots sucking the ancient soil, trees where fellowship was, a forest where farms have been. In that case, of course, he's complaining about the reforestation program in Wales, which is there to try and grow plant trees where the hills have been made bare, and in this case they are fir trees, and fir trees are not inherent to Wales, so they don't like them, or some of them don't. Mm-hmm. Belief in the ultimate survival of Wales as a poetic nation is perhaps expressed truly by another Jones, a Bobby Jones, who is the equivalent in Welsh to what is termed in English literature a modern poet. He throws his challenge at any death. Now, I suggest that possibly we could have Mr. Davis read the Welsh here before we start on the English so that the Welsh can be heard again. And I might add, if I can, put in here the fact that Mr. Davis has been a coal miner, too.
Agan gantel can Bobby Jones. Angai, written ovni, am a modern evank. Am what bung wide until lorry worth with young with ye nigh. Crunny and a van went heb had there, he then goes he made a wineb. Angai, written ovni, am a modern bard. Am what gwewir bung wide and death cavrin after the war handy. Neither I atav a petrasi, dangos got a gornel. Angai, nak ovna, ni una them, iti. Am de vodin har that can bach, vel daigrin arvin more. More kam raig veenaid, sith heb dry na sanu.
The first song. Death, I am the one you fear, for I am quick in youth. For my quick blood is singing praises surging through my veins. You cringe within grave beds, not daring to thrust me upon me your aspect. Death, I am the one you fear, for I am quick in song, for the quick pangs of my blood hold the deep hiding of your earthen plot. Thus you deny me in quandary beneath the dark of the corner. Death, do not fear. No harm I'll hurl you. For you but live lovely and small as a tear by the sea's rim. Welsh sea of my soul, by fall or flood unfettered. Well, Vernon Watkins is an excellent example of a Welshman writing in English. The title of his book derives from the rich Welsh cultural root. Mary Lwyd is the merry grey lady of the pagan religious combination found in many an old tradition in Wales. This is rather interesting because it actually is still done in Wales during Christmas. The group of people, the villagers, go around in fancy dress and they follow a leader who wears a horse's skull. And they visit the farmhouses and stand outside asking for food and drink. But the point is that it's all done in verse, which
beautiful.
They think up at the time. and they challenge the people to open the door and give them food and drink. And the people inside refuse to do so, but they have to refuse in verse again.
It's actually extemporaneous?
Extemporaneous verse. And this continues back and forth until one side or the other has to give up because they can't think of anything else to say in verse.
Which is a long time after,
oh,
I
yes,
imagine.
A long time for Welshmen. Well, I'll read you this collier then. When I was born on Amman Hill, a dark bird crossed the sun. Sharp on the floor the shadow fell. I was the youngest son. And when I went to the county school, I worked in a shaft of light. In the wood of the desk I cut my name, Die for Dynamite. The tall black hills my brothers stood. Their lessons all were done. From the door of the school, when I ran out, they frowned to watch me run. The slow gray bells, they rang a chime surly with grief or age. Clever or clumsy, lad or lout, all would look for a wage. I learnt the valley flowers' names, and the rough bark knew my knees. I brought home trout from the river, and spotted eggs from the trees. A coloured coat I was given to wear, where the lights of the rough land shone. Still jealous of my favour, the tall black hills looked on. They dipped my coat in the blood of a kid, and they cast me down a pit. And although I crossed with strangers, there was no way up from it. Soon as I went from the county school, I worked in a shaft. Said Jim, "You will get your chain of gold, my lad, but not for a likely time." And one said, "Jack was not raised up when the wind blew out the light, though he interpreted their dreams and guessed their fears by night." And Tom, he shivered his leper's lamp for the stain that round him grew. And I heard mouths pray in the afterdamp when the picks would not break through. They changed words there in darkness, and still through my head they run. And white on my limbs is the linen sheet, and gold on my neck the sun.
I'm sure our anthology audience would also enjoy hearing Peter read one of his own poems, in particular, Skillywidden's Progress. If I may, I'd like to explain that this poem was written, I believe, about your 5-year-old son, Dylan, wasn't it?
That's right. It was a time when he was on a roundabout. It's very simple.
A roundabout?
Or a merry-go-round.
Oh.
What do you call it?
You see? We even have trouble in English, don't we?
Well, this one, Skillywidden's Progress. Skillywidden, I better explain, is actually a Cornish word. And it means a pisky baby.
I beg your pardon?
Well, a pisky is actually an elf, so it's an elf's baby.
Oh.
That's what I called my son.
Well, you might mention why you've named him Dylan. I guess it's fairly obvious on this program, but just to make it clear in everyone's mind.
Well, I named him after Dylan Thomas.
And whom is the poem dedicated to?
Well, I dedicated that to his mother, who I met in Wales.
And here is the poem, read for you by the poet Peter John Stevens.
Seen the wild one of horse and rider, of fair blown hair, and arrowing eyes of the frontier finder, brown and brave and unaware that my heart has sheathed his dash of pain as he thrusts away. The hand across the rein, a casual conquering solemnity, assigns me down with the tamped, topped crowns of yesterday's. Over the ledge of leave-taking, he has clapped tomorrow to his side, the boiling music of my blood upswung to his breathtaking saddle of joy become indifferent patricide. In me yet ember-reeled in the froth of ashes, my carven similitudes, my lyre full of loves, my taste in tool touches, struck Solomon dumb before the spinningless flower of Mandom cresting the childish field. My dashing son, praise be no dash of pity to dash me, dashes my son away, to leave me doubly fathering first his birth, second the birth and unfurling wild of his wishes. Yet this way ride sons of skies, with horizontal eyes leave monthly thinning fishes along the night's story, and I, with a shock of moon, am capped with a relict glory to lush my seeded glean. But solemn is done, and the ceremonial. Time that cropped the tail of a comet, lusted from it a spiral of fancy airs, now flips the world my sun spun north in sudden reverse of my universe, born to the mooning me, till fathering forth, in a tumble of numberless colors, I see a mummery's moral to crop my fatherless hairs. For my son, been merry a thousand days, struck five in 1 minute's count, clutching the pole that pins his mount, waves, and Lord again goes round in a fanfarade and juggle of clown.
Thank you, Peter. Skillywidden's Progress, read for you by the poet Peter John Stevens. A few months before his untimely death in 1953, someone asked Dylan Thomas what he considered success in the world of poetry. Mr. Thomas answered, "If people like my poetry, if they like my reading of it, if they like me, that is success and that is bad for me. I should be what I was 20 years ago. Then I was arrogant and lost. Now I'm humble and found. I prefer that other." Well, in spite of his preferences, an almost worldwide audience knew and loved Dylan Thomas. John L. Sweeney wrote of him, "Thomas is a Welshman, and Wales is a voice." Here again, the poet disparaged his own talents and referred to his readings as second-rate Lawton. We'd like to close our Poetry from Wales edition of Anthology with a reading by Dylan Thomas from the Cadman recording, Selections from the Writings of Dylan Thomas, read by the poet. The poem we'll hear is called Lament. This is Dylan Thomas.
When I was a windy boy in the bit and the black spit of the chapel fold, sighed the old ramrod dying of women. I tiptoed shy in the gooseberry wood, the rude owl cried like a telltale tit. I skipped in a blush as the big girls rolled, ninepin down on the donkey's common. And on seesaw Sunday nights I wooed whoever I would with my wicked eyes. The whole of the moon I could love and leave all the green-leaved little weddings, wives in the coal-black bush and let them grieve. When I was a gusty man and a half and the black beast of the beetle's pews, sighed the old ramrod dying of bitches. Not a boy and a bit in the wick-dipping moon and drunk as a new-dropped calf. I whistled all night in the twisted flues. Midwives grew in the midnight ditches, and the sizzling beds of the town cried quick. Wherever I dove in a breast-high shoal, wherever I ramped in the clover quilts, whatsoever I did in the coal-black night, I left my quivering prints. When I was a man you could call a man, and the black cross of the holy house, sighed the old ramrod dying of welcome. Brandy and ripe in my bright base prime, no spring-tailed Tom in the red-hot town, with every simmering woman his mouse, but a hillocky bull in the swelter of summer, come in his great good time to the sultry biding herds, I said. Oh, time enough when the blood creeps cold, and I lie down but to sleep in bed, for my sulking, skulking, coal-black soul. When I was a half of the man I was, and serve me right as the preachers warn, sighed the old ramrod dying of downfall. No flailing calf or cat in a flame or hickory bull in milky grass, but a black sheep with a crumpled horn. At last the soul from its foul mouse hole slunk pouting out when the limp time came, and I gave my soul a blind slashed eye, gristle and rind and a roarer's life, and I shoved it into the coal black sky to find a woman's soul for a wife. Now I am a man no more, no more, and a black reward for a roaring life, sighed the old ramrod, dying of strangers, tidy and cursed in my dove-cooed room. I lie down thin and hear the good bell's jaw. For, oh, my soul found a Sunday wife in the coal-black sky, and she bore angels, harpies around me out of her womb. Chastity prays for me, piety sings, innocence sweetens my last black breath. Modesty hides my thighs in her wings, and all the deadly virtues plague my death.
The voice of Dylan Thomas reading Lament from the Cadman album. We'd like to take this opportunity of thanking Peter John Stevens and Richard Davis for joining us today for our Poetry from Wales edition of Anthology. For those of you who would enjoy further poetry of Wales, may we refer you to the Poetry Book Magazine, Volume 7, Number 1, edited by Marcia Holden, which will be published this month. The magazine is available in libraries and at leading bookstores. Any further information can be obtained by writing to Miss Marcia Holden, 248 East 92nd Street, Brooklyn 12, New York. That address again is Miss Marcia Holden, 248 East 92nd Street, Brooklyn 12, New York. For information on the Poetry Book Magazine devoted to poetry from Wales. And so, Anthology number 37, dated Sunday, November 14th. Next week, Poetry for Thanksgiving. Our guests, by transcription, Agnes Moorhead, the Fred Waring Glee Club, and the New England Conservatory Alumni Chorus, James Pease, baritone soloist. Anthology is brought to you by WRCA in cooperation with the Poetry Center of the YM and YWHA, 92nd Street and Lexington Avenue in Manhattan. John Malcolm Brennan, director. Next Sunday at the Teresa L. Kaufman Auditorium, the Poetry Center will present Family Reunion. T.S. Eliot's modern version of a Greek theme will be given a reading production by a cast of professional actors under the direction of John Hildebrand. Anthology is produced by Steve White, written and directed for WRCA by Draper Lewis. Until next Sunday, this is Fleetwood wishing you good luck and good reading.